Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
The Olympic Games is a snapshot of the world every 4 years. In Beijing, you may remember, it was a giant selfie of China. Brazil will be trying to hide as much as it will be showcasing over the next few weeks as the Games begin in Rio. But the Games are also a showcase for new nations, people who claim a nation but who have no territory to call home. And this year, that tradition continues. Sports journalist and author David Goldblatt this week reminds us that the Games are a proving ground of sorts for emerging societies where admission is an inroad to exploring identity and nationalism. David Goldblatt, renowned sports journalist and author of The Games, A Global History of the Olympics, joins me again to talk about how the Games have always been a marker for the changing community of nations.
We've been here before. I mean, this is one of the fascinating things about the Olympics, partly because it's been going so long. But if you go back, you know, to the early 20th century, you find a whole variety of nations who are then, under some kind of imperial rule or looking to secede in some way, attempting to get themselves a team at the Olympics. And indeed, Bohemia, which was a subsection then of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, managed to get independent representation early on the basis that you could either be a state or you could have somebody from your place on the IOC, which would get you your own separate team. This is now no longer the case, but Bohemia crept in. Similarly, Finland showed up at the 1908 Games in London, and Finland is still a colony of Tsarist Russia at this point. And the Finns show up and say, you know, well, we insist on having a separate team, and we've even brought our own flag. And the deal was in the end that they couldn't march with their flag, but they could have a nameplate, and they weren't to be next to the Russians. They did it again in 1912 in Stockholm, and a similar deal was done. But this time the supporters of Finnish nationalism in the Swedish orchestra played Here Comes the Finnish Cavalry, a well-known nationalist tune, while they marched around the stadium, much to the disgust of the Russians.
That's so amazing. I mean, it makes you wonder. The Games really are a platform for exploring these identities. Could there ever be a Kurdish team? Could there ever be an Aleut team, an Arctic ethnicity team?
Really interesting. I mean, I think that depends on the sort of future architecture of the international sphere and the degree of imagination and flexibility that the IOC is able to show about these things. I think there will certainly be change, and there will certainly be new states and complex forms of sovereignty in the future that may allow that kind of diversity amongst the participants. As for innovation, sophistication amongst the IOC, I really have my doubts.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other subject. And in many ways, you've left that to other authors. Before we go, the Olympics themselves, whether you believe they're successful or not, have become a model for other games and other international competitions. Do you see that as an extension of the Olympic tradition, or are they conflating to game shows and, America's Got Talent or something like that?
The Olympics is interesting in that regard. I mean, one thing one must say about the IOC is, despite the alliance that they have inevitably built with global corporations and television, without which there is no spectacular and there is no show, there has been a genuine attempt to remain tasteful, I would say, to limit, in some senses, both visually and practically, the intrusions of commercialism in particular. And I think actually most other sporting federations are absolutely shameless in the way in which they kowtow to the needs of their sponsors. So in that regard, I actually think the IOC for once is ahead of the game. And similarly, while once we may have thought the IOC was the very pit of corruption and incompetence in global sporting governance, it has been proved otherwise, because the rash rash of corruptions and crises, you know, in the other sporting federations, particularly in football or soccer and athletics, demonstrates that once again the IOC, while being pretty poor, is actually ahead of the game. This is not particularly to the merit of the IOC, but it indicates just how bad the crisis of governance and credibility and competence in the governance of global sport is.
David Goldblatt is a renowned sports journalist and author of The Games, A Global History of the Olympics.